Translation. One may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain body and soul together. But one who desires proprietorship over more than that must be considered a thief, and he deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. Purport. By God's favor, we sometimes get large quantities of food grains, or suddenly receive some contribution or our unexpected profit in business. In this way, we may get more money than needed. So how should that be spent? There is no need to accumulate money in the bank merely to increase one's bank balance. Such a mentality is described in Bhagavad Gita 16:13 as asuric, demoniac. Idam adya maya labdam, imam prapsye manoratam, idam astidam api me, bhavishyati punardhanam. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future, more and more. The asura is concerned with how much wealth he has in the bank today and how it will increase tomorrow. But unrestricted accumulation of wealth is not permitted either by the shastra or, in the modern age, by the government. Actually, if one has more than one requires for his necessities, the extra money should be spent for Krishna. According to Vedic civilization, it should all be given to the Krishna consciousness movement, as ordered by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 9:27. Yat karoshi yadashnasi, yaj juhosi dadasi yat, yat tapasyasi konteya, tat kurushva madarpanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. Grihasthas should spend extra money only for the Krishna consciousness movement. The Grihasthas should give contributions for constructing temples of the Supreme Lord and for preaching of Srimad Bhagavad Gita or Krishna consciousness all over the world. Srinvan Bhagavato Bhikshnam Avatara Katam Ritam. In the Shastras, the Puranas, and other Vedic literatures, there are so many narrations describing the transcendental activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and everyone should hear them again and again. For example, even if we read the entire Bhagavad Gita every day, all 18 chapters, in each reading we shall find a new explanation. That is the nature of transcendental literature. The Krishna consciousness movement, therefore, affords one an opportunity to spend his extra earnings for the benefit of all human society by expanding Krishna consciousness. In India especially, we see hundreds and thousands of temples that were constructed by the wealthy men of society who did not want to be called thieves and be punished. This verse is very important. As stated here, one who accumulates more money than needed is a thief, and by the laws of nature, he will be punished. One who acquires more money than necessary becomes desirous of enjoying material comforts more and more. Materialists are inventing so many artificial necessities, and those who have money, being allured by such artificial necessities, try to accumulate money to possess more and more. This is the idea of modern economic development. Everyone is engaged in earning money, and the money is kept in the bank, which then offers money to the public. In this cycle of activities, everyone is engaged in getting more and more money, and therefore the ideal goal of human life is being lost. Concisely, it may be said that everyone is a thief and is liable to be punished. Punishment by the laws of nature takes place in the cycle of birth and death. No one dies fully satisfied by the fulfillment of material desires, for that is not possible. Therefore, at the time of one's death, one is very sorry, being unable to fulfill his desires. By the laws of nature, one is then offered another body to fulfill his unsatisfied desires. And upon taking birth again, accepting another material body, one voluntarily accepts the threefold miseries of life. I was born blinded by the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual masters are opening my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, and I therefore offer my humble obeisances unto them. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Upstaya Bhutale Shrimate Shivaram Swaminita Namini. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Upstaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminita Namini. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashkachadish Tarni. Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langai Tegrim Yad Kripatam Hamvane Shigrandina Tarnam. Narayanam Namaskrita Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayamadirayat. Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Godatai Pushpanvanta Chitra Shanda Tamonido. I offer my humble obeisances unto Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who have risen simultaneously over the horizon of Gaudadesh, just like the sun and the moon, to dissipate the darkness of ignorance and to wonderfully bestow benediction upon all. Yavat Briyata Jataram Tavat Svatvam Hidehinam Adikam Yo Bimanyeta Sasteno Dandam Arhati. One may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain body and soul together. But one who desires proprietorship over more than that must be considered a thief, and he deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. There's a lot in this, and quite an expansive purport. What I'll try to explore in the class is the different concepts that are being touched upon here. My main theme will be this concept of that we have a quota, and we should keep to that quota. As soon as we go beyond the quota, we become a thief. And I'll try and explain how this concept or principle of quota is not just relating to money. It's relating not just to physical things either, but even to metaphysical things. It's got quite a wide scope, what we have to keep to our quota in. But first of all, we have to understand the context in which this concept of the quota exists. And the context is delineated here, but especially I think in Isha Upanishad, it's really clear-cut. The first two verses, Om Purnamada Purnamidam, Purnat Purnam Eva Vishishyate, Purnat Purnasya Adaya Purnam Eva Vishishyate. Everything's perfect and complete. Everything's perfectly balanced. All units that emanate from the perfect and complete are also perfect and complete in themselves. And then the next verse, Ishavasyamidam Sarvam, is saying that this idea that everyone has their quota and should keep to their quota. So it's basically saying that Om Purnam is so perfectly balanced that you can only escape throwing the balance out, being responsible for throwing the balance out of kilter if you keep to your quota, because it's perfectly balanced. And as soon as you actually either go below or above your quota, the balance is no longer there. And Krishna is so, you know, omniscient and transcendental in his intelligence that this is applying in the most minutest detail when we go above or below. It says that you know, shurasya dara nishitaturatyaya, that spiritual life is like a razor's edge. To be spiritual means to be on a razor's edge. And as soon as you go a little off the road this way or off the path that way, you get karmic reaction. It's Sridharananda Maharaj once said, sensitivity training. Krishna set up the universe as a kind of great big sort of center for sensitivity training. It's like when you see kids, you know, the kids, a child is trying to be taught proper conduct and manners. So when say there's a play school and kids are together, and one kid's kind of enjoys pinching the other kids and making them cry and sort of enjoys, you know, because we all have this propensity to try and lord it over. We've all come here to be the controller and the enjoyer. That's the identity of every living entity that comes to the material world, whether in a human form of life or not. So when the child pinches another child, makes them cry, how do you teach them to stop doing that? You teach them by giving them a pinch. Every time they pinch another kid, you give them a pinch. They go, oh. And then when they sort of go towards the other kid to pinch them, they're half looking over here, are they going to get pinched? And then they start to think twice about it. Because now I know what it feels like. So, this is applying, you know, this is what the law of karma basically is. It's letting you know what it feels like. There was one famous song in the 60s, Bob Dylan's song, Like a Rolling Stone, and that was like a bit of his theme. How does it feel? You know, now that the shoe is on the other foot, you know, how does it feel? There's one verse that I thought was quite poetic. He said, something about, hang on. Napoleon in rags. He had this Napoleon in rags. He was describing actually a mad person. Because Napoleon was a very, you know, highly acclaimed leader of an empire. Very exalted personality. And so if you don't, there's a contradiction here. Napoleon in rags, he said, you used to laugh about Napoleon in rags. You used to laugh at this guy. And you used to laugh at the language that he used. Obviously, this guy is some kind of person who's eccentric at best and mad probably at worst. And he's kind of babbling. He's wearing rags and he thinks he's Napoleon. And you used to laugh at him. You know, this person who's kind of like no compassion. You used to kind of be condescending and think, you know, look at this stupid, crazy person. No compassion. Used to laugh at Napoleon rags and language that he used. Then he says, go to him now. He calls you. You can't refuse. When you've got nothing to lose. So he's saying that, okay, you used to laugh at him when he was down in the gutter, stupid and mad, but now that's your situation. You've been humbled. So now go to him and sort of make up and be a little bit compassionate. Because that's how it works, that material energy, if there's something, you know, if there's some lack of sensitivity, if there's some tendency to exploit our environment, to be, have a sort of superior mentality, that has to be, you can't go back to Godhead with that. So therefore, you have to become humbled. That person must become humbled. And it's done through this sensitivity training. You get to find out what it's like for somebody to, you know, you'll get these experiences where somebody with a superior mentality treats you as an inferior. And then you'll find out, I don't like that feeling. So, It says here that we've got our quota of money. And if you exceed that, you're considered a thief. So, I was thinking the other day how, we have these, Krishna has these six opulences, Sadaishvarya, wealth, power, fame, beauty, knowledge and renunciation. And there's a tendency to exceed our quota in all of these departments. We see it in society in general, tendency to exceed the quota in all of these departments. You know, everyone has a certain beauty, certain elegance, but, you know, people are going to the doctors to get plastic surgery because their chin is not quite right or something. And then the amount of money that is spent on cosmetics, you know, men and women. If you go through Asda, you can see that the men's cosmetic department is kind of really getting jacked up these days. There's, men are becoming vain, and so people are trying to exceed this kind of what nature has given them. And in terms of wealth, that's also already mentioned. In terms of power, people are, you know, called megalomaniacs because they can never have enough power. They get intoxicated by power. And then fame. Recently, I saw on the BBC Madonna. She made this statement that she said, "I'm not going to sit still. I'm not going to be satisfied until I'm as famous as God." So, exceeding her quota, you know, well and truly. And you know, her reaction, I was thinking, what would be her reaction? Her reaction is probably going to be, well, she's going to have quite, you know, Yamaraj is going to have quite a list on her. But one of her reactions is that she's going to have to go through so many lifetimes of being a totally unknown, anonymous kind of hole in the wall. Nobody, you know, nobody pays any attention to her. She's going to be ignored for a long time. I was thinking maybe that would be the way things are balanced, because it has to always come back to the balance, this propensity to lord it over. There was one day I was parked in a Tesco's. I was in Travelling Sanctum. This is just a very kind of trivial little incident, but I was having something to eat, and I saw these crows, and I just thought, I'll share a bit of prasadam with the crows. There was three crows, so I threw them a piece of bread, and they all went for it, but the strong one shooed the other two off. You know, all for me, selfish, this propensity to control. And then I thought, okay, you know, you're greedy. I'm going to give the other two some anyway. So I threw another piece far from the greedy one and another piece far from on the other side from the greedy one. So there was like 3 points and each of them could get it. But what the greedy one did is when the other one went for that one, he just raced over there, shooed him off, picked it up and brought it to his one, and then did the same for the other one. So he still had all three pieces. That's phenomenal, you know, how selfish. You know, so that propensity is there. Even this concept of quota, you know, we have to be very, Prabhupada says, be conscious and be Krishna conscious. For instance, in conversations, I've had experience, I'm sure everyone has, where you've been talking to someone and they're totally dominating the conversation. They don't really care about you. You're just incidental. You could be anybody. Who you are is irrelevant. It's just that you're a pair of ears just to listen to them. And then they just dominate the whole conversation. And haven't really sought out your, you know, opinion or your feedback or anything. And that is equally a form of greed as what Prabhupada is talking about here. You know, when you're upsetting the balance and taking more money than you need, which means somebody else is going to have less money than what they need. Similarly, in a conversation, when you exceed your quota, you're taking from that other person's... let me just see what it says here. Right, from their right. Go ahead. Is that what they call it? Right. One Greek philosopher said, in such cases, it's simply a form of greed. It's just a manifestation of greed when that happens. And similarly, we see that, you know, the balance of nature, we have this arrangement in nature where sex life is there for the procreation of children. But people are greedy. They want to exceed their quota of enjoyment. So therefore, the pill is there. And they think, now I can have sex without the inconvenience of having the children. I can enjoy, you know, I can enjoy unlimitedly, and I don't have to have this botheration and this inconvenience. But what they don't realize is that there's even more inconvenience if you take that path than if you just take the path that's actually the sort of the moral high road, the path of good character and morality. Is that okay? If you have this desire for sex life, go ahead, but the natural consequences of sex life is that there's going to be a child. So that's your responsibility, and see out that responsibility. And then it's like you're not going to get entangled in all this karma. When people engage in illicit sex, there's so much subtle karma going on, and from subtle comes gross. It's like a toxicity enters the consciousness. A toxicity enters the consciousness. And it's very hard, especially the sex life, illicit sex toxicity, it's very hard to erase from the consciousness. And these people who are doing this, they're going to be taking lifetimes and lifetimes to erase that toxic element that doesn't really belong in a pure in somebody's pure consciousness. So I'll just now go on to another kind of section of the purport. Where it says here that in India especially, we see hundreds and thousands of temples that were constructed by the wealthy men of society who did not want to be called thieves and be punished. We should guard against having too simplistic an understanding of the quota concept, right? It's not just a pure one-dimensional communism that, you know, we have to all have the same amount as each other and then it's all balanced. No, that's not true. It's according to your individuality. It's according to your individuality that the quota concept applies. So this chap, you know, his quota is to have this much money. Krishna has actually, according to the grand arrangement, the grand scheme of things, Krishna has allocated this individual, you know, a lot of money. And this other person, he's allocated a smaller amount of money. So they have to keep to their sort of amounts. We see that, for instance, you know, there are kings and there is the case of, was Prata, not Prataparudra, Pundarik Vijayanidhi wasn't a king, but he was a great rich man. And it's not that he should just, you know, renounce everything, all his wealth, and just get to some kind of base level. One time I heard a class of Radha Swamis where he said that one very wealthy patron of the temple came up to him and said, Maharaj, I'm going to sell my house and I'm going to just give everything to the temple and I'm just going to live like the brahmacharis. And Radha says, no, that's not right. That wouldn't be right. He said, he had a very posh house. He says, I don't want to live in a house, this person said, I don't want to live in a house that's so much more opulent than the rest of your congregation. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai, Sri Tramlakshmi Mahanaman Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gorani Tai Ki Jai. That was the motivation of this chap. I don't want to live in a house that's so much more opulent than the rest of your congregation. I'll sell the house and I'm going to get a more humble, kind of residence. Radha Swami said, no. He said, you know, you've got such a beautiful house. You just Krishnize it and start having programs in your house and start engaging that house in Krishna's service. Radha Swami could see that, you know, his quota, according to his karma, was to have this certain level of opulence. It would have been artificial and wrong for him to give that up. George Harrison offered to come to the temple and just join the Brahmacharya Ashram. Prabhupada said, no, don't give up your talent, your fame, your ability to influence so many people. Don't give that up and just become some, you know, an everyday Brahmachari. Not that an everyday Brahmachari isn't anything exalted. It certainly is, actually. But we're talking about practicalities. Utility is the principle. So he was told not to do that. And then again, we see on another level, Sanatana Goswami had this posh blanket, this expensive blanket, and Lord Chaitanya said, you know, what are you doing with that blanket? That's not you. Give that up. All it was a blanket. Everything else was renounced. And give that up. Raghunath Das also had such an opulent background, so much wealth, phenomenal. And he was also guided to being very renounced, and he became the personification of renunciation. So the concept of what is your quota, you shouldn't have a stereotyped understanding of what is, you know, who you are and what is your identity in this respect. And the last point is this. This one very nice, if I can find it. Oh, yeah. It's Prabhupada saying, about how giving contributions for constructing temples, preaching Bhagavad Gita, because temples and transcendental literatures, they purify us. We become purified of the toxic elements. And we start to see what the balance is, and then we start to, and not just see the balance, but we develop the desire to find the balance in our own life by the association of pure devotees. You know, by reading the Bhagavatam, we're associating with pure devotees, all practically like on many levels. This is the book Bhagavatam, the person Bhagavatam has written it. There's all these narrations about pure devotees. And by that association, we become purified. We become purified of all those toxic elements. There's that verse about somebody who said it. I think it was Rupa Goswami, that don't go to the Jamuna. Because if you go there, you might see Krishna, and he'll be playing his flute, and he's got this threefold bending form, and he's so beautiful. And once you see Krishna, all your propensities for material enjoyment, you're going to have to give them up. You won't have any choice. That's just how it works. So in a similar way, when you listen to the pure devotees, the same things happen. You hear that sound vibration, and whoever listens to the words of the pure devotee should know what they're dealing with. Because just by listening to them, you start to drift towards renunciation and towards higher awareness and towards sensitivity. That's just inevitable. And because we get purified, we're becoming purified, that's why that happens. It's the material impediments, it's the material coverings that stop that attraction. They are actually a barrier between us and becoming attracted towards Krishna and towards becoming Krishna conscious. They dull the attraction. And so when we become purified of that barrier, of that impediment, then the natural attraction towards Krishna starts to follow on. That naturally ensues. So we have 10 minutes if there's any comments or questions.